So we come to the last lesson in this particular quarter. I guess the main things that we'll be covering tonight have to do with Moses' death and Joshua taking over the reins, so to speak. The children of Israel making their way across the Jordan into the land of Canaan, camping at Gilgal and preparing to take the land that God has promised to give them. We have Freddie here tonight. Eric Patterson will be taking up where we leave off tonight, Sunday morning. Okay? But as we start the class, though, he has some introductory comments here, particularly dealing with Joshua, I think is what he has in mind here. Because Moses has been talking to the people about not being afraid and not forgetting God and so forth and being careful to do all the things that God had given them. And I guess I didn't read far enough. But before he goes up into the mountain, going to have to give some blessings and so forth. But they're about 30 days or so remaining before they actually the land. Because they're going to spend 30 days mourning the death of Moses after he goes up into the mountain. Then they'll spend another 30 days before they actually start taking the land, if I recall correctly. But before Moses goes up into the mountain, die, he will view the land that has been promised, not be able to go into the land. Because what particular event do you recall that where God said, as a result of what you did, says, yeah, he said, let us bring forth water. He did not give God the glory for bringing forth the water. As a result of that, God said you would not be able to go into the land of Canaan. It's interesting that Moses, there was no comment made by Moses at that particular time. And I think showing type of person Moses was, God said, you're not going to go. And he didn't argue. Accepted, God said, as he had done on so many occasions. They're still camped there on the plains of Moab, on the east side of Jordan, looking over into the land to the west. That's the west, isn't it? Okay, so Moses gives those blessings, and I think Charles has these listed on under paragraph number 3 on page 2 there. He gives a general blessing to the congregation. In fact, he begins this blessing, and then he kind of interrupts it and gives some blessings to each individual tribe. Then at the end of that, he goes back and goes into a praise of Jehovah, basically. So his blessing to the congregation is basically broken up into two parts, kind of interspersed there with the individual blessings to the tribes. But before we go look at that, though, God tells Moses, says, you go up into the land, go up into the mountain. We know that that's Mount Nebo, to the very top, Mount Pisgah, I believe it was referred to. Says, you're going to view the land of Canaan that I'm going to give to the children of Israel, as he had promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But he says, there you're going to die. What's going to be strange or different about this death compared to all the other deaths that we've studied? God said it's going to happen. He's going to be. He said, "I'm going to bear you." So it's very special. I don't think we read about God bearing anybody other than Moses. It says you go up there, you're going to look, and he shows him the length and the breadth of land. Then there he dies. God buries him, and no one knows where his scepter is today. Bob's book, he made a comment that up to this very point, Moses' eyesight was still good, health was good, so forth. It kind of seems odd that a man in such good, quote, physical condition died. But God allowed him to have his health, his eyesight, and so forth as leader of these people right up to the very end. But his appointed day had come, and there he dies on the mountain, buried by Jehovah. Comments or questions? Okay, let's see where Charles, he does go then to the blessings, and again, I'm not going to spend much time on that. Basically, I would point out, though, at the end of page 2, talking about Judah, the tribe of Judah. Don't know exactly how he has it stated here, but we know that Judah will be the predominant tribe. They will be the only one who remains faithful in the Yom. They will be separated from the other tribes. Of course, it will be out of Judah that the Messiah would come eventually. But they're the ones who are the leaders of the people. They're the ones that move out as they move from place to place and so forth. So we see them as taking the leadership role among all the tribes. Top of page 3, also he made comment about the tribe of Levi. Don't recall of any instance where the tribe of Levi did not behave themselves according to God's laws and so forth. Now, you remember the occasion when Moses and Joshua, they were up in the mountain. People had Aaron to take the golden calf and so forth. Remember how Moses, as he came back down on the mountain, how he was upset and so forth. And he asked the question, like, who's on the Lord's side? Something to that effect. The men of Levi came over and stood with Moses, and they went out into the camp and struck those who were involved in sin, struck them down. It didn't matter whether they were kinfolk, personal friends, whatever. But we see the tribe of Levi generally as a very strong tribe committed to carrying out the will of God and so forth. I see Charles has that mentioned in his notes here. Well, let's read the last comment at page 3 there. As I say, we'll read it together. It said, these blessings and descriptions seem to be tied to the people in a physical sense. That is, they pertain to the tribe's conquest and possession of the land and their life in the lands of their inheritance. Noteworthy that none seem to care beyond this temporal span. There do not seem to be any allusions to longer-term spiritual blessings or prophecies, as when Jacob blessed Judah in saying, the scepter shall not depart until Shiloh come. The tribe of Simeon is not identified in these blessings. The reason is not given. However, as we go back to Genesis, we recall where the situation had occurred there, where Jacob said that because of their nature and behavior, he would divide them, Levi and Simeon. You remember the situation where they went in and had all the men of a particular group of people circumcised because they had defiled their sister Dinah. As a result of that, Jacob promised that they would be scattered. So Levi was blessed because of his stand at Sinai, but was still scattered in the cities of the Levites and had no possession. Simeon was apparently divided and scattered in a different manner than the Levites. For example, it was the tribe of Simeon that saw the great loss of men of war, as evidenced by the first and second census, 59,000 compared to 22,000. Simeon's inheritance was taken out of the inheritance of Judah, though dwelling in the territory south of Judah. The tribe was thought to have been eventually absorbed into Judah, just disappeared. They are referred to in the days of Hezekiah. Simeon's blessing was, in a sense, already determined. They would enjoy the general blessing of the people, that of the tribes around them. So the general blessing is concluded and begins with a general expression of praise to God. There is no one like Jehovah. Rise upon the heavens to help you. He is eternal and is your dwelling place. His everlasting arms are beneath you throughout the enemy before you, so Israel will dwell in safety. Blessings to you, O Israel. Who is like you? A people saved by Jehovah. Is your shield of defense the sword of your excellence? Your enemies will bow before you. You will ride upon his height. So this ends his blessings to nation in general as well as the individual. Okay, so he talks about next, item number four, Moses' death, and we have talked some about that already, where he would go up mountain, look over into the land. There he would die and be buried by the Lord. He was 120 years old. Recall the three periods of Moses' life, the 40 years in Egypt, the 40 years over tending his father-in-law's sheep, 40 years leading these people out of Egypt, wilderness wanderings, and now up to the point of going into the land. Mentioned before that he, after he died, said Israel mourned and wept for Israel in the plains of Moab for 30 days. So one cannot help but be moved by the death of this great man, how God always dealt with him, even in death. One senses they have been privileged to see into this man's life, carried as though we were there. One lesson to take away is whatever and whenever God has given great abilities, opportunities, God places great responsibility upon that person. They must be strong and courageous. God will help. During this quarter, we have seen Moses grow from that man who can be than anybody you want to. That was his last excuse. God talked to him out of that. Now we see a man who has talked to God, quotation marks, face to face, been in his presence, time where his face, his countenance even glowed, came in the presence of God and back and forth. No one probably was ever closer to God than this man, Moses. Yet a very humble man. Two occasions at least, God said, I'm going to destroy this people, their rebellious attitude, make of you a great. Moses wasn't ready. Interceded for these people over and over and over again. Got them back into the proper relationship with God time after time. Very humble man. Someone who cared very much for these rebellious people. That particular reference right there is, as he's giving some of the speeches, recalling how it happened. But at the time, you know, in the book of Exodus, when God said it, he didn't say anything. Appreciate you bringing that out, though, Fred.
Right.
So he did entreat, but we just didn't have the record back. Okay, thank you. All right, other comments? All right. So let's see. All right, Moses is now dead. Joshua has been selected at some point prior to this, and he refers to Joshua being filled with the spirit of wisdom because Moses had laid his hands on him. Children of Israel listened to Joshua, did as Jehovah commanded Moses. He mentions what I had indicated earlier. We don't really know anybody who had known Jehovah basically face to face, like no one had done signs and wonders Jehovah sent him to do in the land of Egypt. So we didn't see anybody in the Old Testament particularly doing all those types of things. No one exercised the mighty hand and did such awesome things as Moses did sight of Israel. Fortunately, unfortunately, time passes. There is a passage that Freddie and I will talk about next quarter. Even those people during the days of Joshua, they continued to be faithful. But as time went by, those people forgot all the things that God had done back in Egypt, what he did while Moses was alive, and what he did when Joshua was leading. And so when that generation died off, that's when the trouble began for the... All right. So we're down to the point where they're about ready to go into the land of Canaan, crossing the Jordan. That really picks up in the first few chapters of the book of Joshua. But Joshua is now their leader and ready to go to work. It's interesting may be a little bit out of sequence here, but as he talks to the men of those tribes who had requested that there be given an inheritance on the east side of Jordan, these people, well, he has it under the second item here under preparation for crossing. But he reminds these people of the commitment that they had made about, let us have this land, but you get ready to go into the land, then we will leave our families and so forth here. Men of war will go over and help conquer the land. And as he talked with those men and reminded them of that, then it was very commendable on their part, because as we have agreed, look under item number 2, that preparation for crossing, down about the last item. We have agreed, and we will do it. We will obey you in all things as we obeyed Moses. Whoever of us rebels against your word shall die. Only be strong and courageous. So these, Joshua, we see Joshua with 100% commitment from the people as he takes over as the leader and prepares to carry them over into the land. But as he takes over, God talks to him about being strong, not being afraid, being courageous, that, you know, I'm going to be with you. Fight it. You be careful to know the law. Be careful to do all what the law says. Don't go to the right. Don't go to the left. That reminds us of anything that God says to us today, concerning His Word particularly. Don't add to it. Don't take away from it. Don't go beyond, and so forth. So he's giving Joshua the same instructions. Do not veer to the right or to the left. Let your words and actions be guided by what is written. This way you will succeed and prosper. We know that Joshua did that. Now, as he gets ready to go into the land, though, he sends spies into the city of Jericho. And he says, go view the land, and particularly you go and look at the city of Jericho. See what kind of people are there, what the walls look like, and so forth. Of course, you know the story of how these spies went over. Went to the house of a harlot, Rahab, to spend the night, trying to blend into the background, so to speak, not be observed as spies, but they were noticed. These people had been looking across, I'm sure, Jordan, for several days, looking at that great multitude of people over there, knowing they were going to come over. In fact, what does Rahab tell these people? The spies said, what was the attitude of the people over in the land of Canaan? Yeah, hearts melted. Yeah. Because of what? Why did it melt? All the way back when he brought them out of Egypt. How he parted the waters. Let them cross the Red Sea. How he took care of those kings over there on the other side, across the river from them. So they were terrified. So here they are in the house. Word comes to the king of Jericho, sends people to get these spies, some of the soldiers, but she hens as though they're not there. They're not in the house. Where are they at? They're on the roof, right? Hidden under some flax that had been put out to dry. So she leads them to believe, though, that they have gone out of the city. So they leave and they head back toward the Jordan River, trying to overtake these spies. But all the while, they're hidden up on the roof. That's when she has this discussion with the people about wanting to save her mother, her father, her brothers, whatever possessions they have. So they make an agreement that would happen. But what are some provisions that they put on her? That we'll take care of you, provided. Yeah, she's going to let them out the window over the wall. Fortunately, her house is on the wall, because they locked the gates of the city when these guys go looking for the spies, they said, you got to have that scarlet cord. Were you letting us down? Also, all of your family's got to be in your house. And if they go outside, don't blame us. Don't blame us. So there are some stipulations that it's their own responsibility. But if by chance we do harm some of them, then blame falls on us. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Don't tell anybody that we were here, are here, have been here, or anything. So they put the word on her, but she's willing to do that. And as a result, we know the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey would say. When they came and the walls of Jericho came tumbling down, her house were saved as a result of it. But the spies come back to Joshua. They make their report. Jehovah has delivered the land into our hands. People melt before. So they believed words of this lady that people were terribly afraid of. So they cross the Jordan, or get ready to cross the Jordan the next morning. They move down close to the river, and instructions go out as to what's going to happen. The priests are going to go out in front with the Ark of the Covenant, and the rest of you are to follow, but you're to stay back about 3,000 feet, half a mile or so back, where the priests are. You also are to consecrate yourselves, because said the Lord will do wonders among you. So when the priests get to the edge of the water, and as they step into the water, then the water is going to be piled up. What was kind of strange about the waters already? Flood stage, right? Normally, about this place, could have normally walked across the river rather ease, but now flooded. So Bob mentioned in his book, maybe 10 or 12 foot deep this particular season of the year. Here it is, God just piles the water up. People are allowed to cross over. But as they're crossing over, 12 men are selected, one from each tribe. What instructions are they given? Okay, each one of them pick up a rock or a stone, and what are they going to do with it, Bill? Right, we're going to make a monument. What's the big deal about stacking up 12 rocks? Says in time to come, when your children ask, what's this pile of rock all about? Then you'll be able to tell them how that God allowed you to cross over on that particular day. They're also going to pile some rocks up in the middle of the river. Did I remember that right? Okay. So we're going to stack some up in the river too. But to think about how many people had to cross over, about how many men of war, men over 600,000, wasn't it? 600,000 men who were 20 years or above. Then you got women and children and so forth, and ones underneath, younger than that. A tremendous multitude of people had to cross over, but no problem for God. It was the 10th day of the first month of the 41st year. So what's about to happen? What's going to happen? Right. What's going to happen 4 days later? Passover. Remember? Passover is on the 14th day of the first month. So here they are about to observe the Passover 40 years from the time they observed the first Passover. So they're getting ready to do that as they cross over the river. And they're camping at a place called Gilgal, between the Jordan River and the city of Jericho. Now, when they get to Gilgal, though, God commands that all the males be circumcised. And you recall how the story we talked about, the men of Shechem, several days they were really unable to do anything. So here they are, sitting out there in the middle of wide open land, not able to defend themselves. Think that was a test of faith? Why didn't God have them do it over on the other side of the river where the enemies couldn't get to them? Maybe food for the garden? That's right. But anyway, I think it was maybe a test. Here they are right out in the open country. God says, circumcise all your men. They're not able to do anything. They confess, but they go ahead and obey God just like He commanded. Again, I think this is an indication. This is a little different people. Had those old, that older generation that came out. Why they hadn't been circumcised, Bob has some comments about possibilities as to why they hadn't circumcised these people during the wilderness wandering and so forth. Talks about the fact that this representing the fact that they had rolled away the reproach of Egypt. So now they are in the land. They've gotten rid of the reproach of Egypt. They're ready to observe the Passover, ready to take on the land. So they observe the Passover. Now they are allowed to eat of the produce of the land. Manna that God has fed them all these years, last 40 years. Manna is no more. Now into the promised land, they're eating of the produce and so forth, that land. So their journey from Egypt, Canaan, now complete, but a lot of work to be done. Any comments about this lesson or the lesson quarter in general? He mentions the two spies. You like to swim the Jordan River at flood state. So these two spies even did something that maybe the previous set of spies wouldn't have done. They put their little old life in jeopardy basically to get across the Jordan River. Because he said, go spy it out. And they went. Yeah, they were ready for the task. But they didn't hesitate. That's right. There was no obstacle. They didn't think that they couldn't overcome with God's help. So we see a people of faith here. Trust. Yes, slightly different. Had two good spies back there. There's an interesting comment. Whenever they start dividing up the land, and I'm sure y'all will talk about it. What was Caleb's request? Give me some land down there where them giants are at. He said, I'm still just as strong as I used to be. God had protected him also, just like he had done Moses. So here old Caleb is, he wants some of them giants. You know, he's not afraid of them, even at age 85. I think that's what his age was at that particular time. But he said, I might need a little bit of help. He asked for somebody to marry his daughter or whatever, whoever would go and help conquer the land, could have his daughter, if I remember. His assessment of it, afraid of those giants. Well, I know God said, ready to go for it.
Yeah.
Well, I wish Charles could have been here tonight and included Porter. Been a lot of effort, as evidenced by notes he's brought in each time. Trying to summarize a tremendous amount of, I don't know where it got changed, but this quarter at one time was two quarters worth. In fact, Bob's book is set up to be taught in two quarters. That's the reason we have tried so hard to squish it down. But to cover 250 pages in that work makes a lot of squeezing and Charles's. Appreciate the comments the times I was teaching and appreciate your patience tonight.
Anybody